And welcome to another episode of A Presence on Your Journey, a production of Community Autism Resources. I am very, very pleased to have as a guest today, Mr. Steve Manchester, a local author. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you, Dennis. I appreciate the opportunity.
I guess I'd like to start by giving our listeners an introduction of who you are, your background.
Sure. Well, thank you. Again, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today. I really appreciate it. I'm actually a local guy. I come from Westport, Massachusetts. I graduated from Westport High in 1986. My background really is in law enforcement. I did about 10 years for the Department of Correction, most of that time as a prison investigator. I also served in the first Gulf War for the United States Army Military Police, which just happened to be a brutal experience for me. So I promised myself in the desert, you know, once I get home, I'm going to chase my dream down, and that has always been to be, you know, a published author. So obviously, I did make it home, thank God. And it's taken me really 20, 25 years to get to where I sit today. I have 16 published books. Four of them, I'm happy to report, are number one bestsellers on the digital side. So for Barnes & Noble Nook and Amazon Kindle. And we've done very well with the books, and I'm grateful to be at this point in my career where I could take on a project like Perfect Chase, One Reflection of Autism, with a friend of mine who has autism out of Swansea, Chase Howard. So it's just been a joy to be able to work on this book with him and get it out into the world so that people could learn more about autism.
Have you written any books about your experiences in the desert?
I did. I wrote a book called The Unexpected Storm, The Gulf War Legacy. That was really one of my first books to come out. It was a catharsis, Dennis, right? It took me about 5 years to return to who I am, you know, as a human being after that experience in the war. But The Unexpected Storm, the book itself, really helped to heal my soul from that experience.
And what led you to write this book and particularly pick a relatively short period, a 24-hour period? What actually led you to write this book and how did you develop the details?
Very good question. My daughter Isabella, who's 12 years old, dances with the Howard girls, Jenna and Kylie, and they dance at Laura Lee's dance studio in Swansea. So our families, the Howard family and the Manchester families, became friends. So Chase Howard obviously has autism and he and I hit it off right away, became instant friends. And a couple of years ago, I was watching him. He's very creative, so he was sitting at his dining room table and he's drawing some things. And I was watching him and really kind of talking to him about the creative process. And I said to him, you know, someday you and Uncle Steve are going to write a book together. And everybody laughed, but they didn't realize that I wasn't kidding, right? So at that point, I really started to take down notes. And I knew that I wanted to write a book about autism, but not a book that would be scientific or medicinal. Really a story that has a beginning and an end. It has characters. It has a plot line that people can follow and be interested in. And then when you get to the end of the book, you realize that, hey, I've learned about autism by reading this story and enjoying it.
And true to form, Chase provides the illustrations for this book. And
right.
Is it okay to go into some of the illustrations?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So Chase did all the characters in the book. So I'm happy to report that all of Chase's illustrations about himself, the personal stuff, he's always wearing a smile, which is awesome. He draws his mother, his sisters, the other kids that appear in the book. So he does all the characters. We brought in Stephanie Grassi, who's a graphic designer. She does websites and is incredibly, incredibly talented from Rhode Island. And what she did is she superimposed all the characters on some very simple background so that we could carry the story along. Because this is a children's book, it was important to have pictures intertwined with the words to kind of explain the story. But one of the things about the book that I really love is normally, as a writer, I'm not too concerned with the illustrations, right? It's all about the words for me. That's what I do. In this case, because, you know, a picture speaks 1,000 words, I really wanted this book to open up with 2 pictures, right? As Chase sees himself, so from his perspective. So when you open up the book, on the left side, you have Chase looking into a mirror, and he's wearing brown corduroys, he's wearing a green shirt. And then when you look at the right side, it's his reflection looking back at him, and it's the same clothes, except now he's wearing a red cape. And I asked Stephanie to add that red cape because I wanted people to see that when Chase looks at himself, he sees a superhero. And I think that's probably true in most cases with him. So it's just a way to set the tone that this entire book is really from his perspective, even though his mom, dad, and his sisters are doing a lot of the narration.
And in point of fact, Chase becomes really enthralled in movies and takes on some of the characters, and some of them can be superheroes. And the book opens, in fact, with his taking on the roles of a little rascal. And I wonder if is that kind of depicted in some of the illustrations?
It is, definitely. I mean, we talk about Little Rascals, the movie. We talk about Peter Pan. I mean, Chase loves his movies, right? To the point where, you know, he'll watch them on his laptop and he'll pause scenes, rewind, pause, rewind, pause, rewind, to the point where, you know, it would drive you and I mad. But for him, he's trying to pick up detail. He's a perfectionist and he's very methodical when he's looking at stuff. So the one thing about Chase is he also takes on this movie as if it's reality, right? So a lot of the characters in the movies, he actually perceives them to be his friends, right? So they're as real to him as you and I are to each other as we conduct this interview. So That's a good thing in some cases, but a lot of times his mom and dad will take their thumb and press it to their forefinger and say, click, turn it off, almost as if they're using this invisible remote control, trying to bring Chase out of the movie, bringing him back into reality, into the moment to where we're at.
And when the characters are sad, he becomes very, very
sad.
He does.
Yeah, he's very empathetic, for sure.
And without giving away the book, there's actually a couple of scary instances in the book that where his taking on the characters of the movie has almost led to some very, very dangerous situations.
Absolutely. Which was important, Dennis, because when I wrote this book, part of the vehicle to drive the plot line, I ended up selecting a sleepover party, right? So you have these three girls that come to the family's house and they meet Chase for the first time. But what I'm able to do is, within a 24-hour period of time, I'm able to explain what autism is to these three kids who have no idea what it is, right? So to do that in a storyline, right? And part of some of the themes that go into this book, we'll talk about safety and we'll use Peter Pan or Little Rascals where situations happen in the movie. And if he were to enact that in real life, he could put himself in some serious danger, right? So for him, there is no difference between the movie and reality and that stuff that his parents and his sisters have to reel him in from.
When the friends first come over, the sisters, they become almost overprotective.
Right.
They're described in the book as being defensive at first. So I wonder if you can just kind of describe that.
It's an opening, and it was very important to do this, right? When the girls first come over, one of them is looking at Chase, and Chase is flailing his hands around. He's having a difficult time making eye contact. So the girl asks Kylie, what's wrong with your brother? And Kylie stops in her tracks and turns and says, there's nothing wrong with my brother. He's perfect, right? And then she goes on to explain that he does have autism. And then we start to explain what autism is and what he has and what he's experiencing and some of the challenges he has that starts to explain some of his behavior. And by doing that, once we have understanding, then obviously we break the ignorance and the kids aren't afraid of him.
And the lack of eye contact is the first sign of trouble in this case. And so I wonder if you can go into that, the importance and how that lack of eye contact was a warning sign.
Well, I've obviously spent a lot of time with Chase and his mom and dad and the family. And we spent basically a year and a half together really going through all the information I need just for a children's book, right? So it goes to show how much research goes in. But from what they told me, when he was very young, before he started to show any signs, they noticed that he was having a difficult time making eye contact or keeping direct eye contact with people, right? Which, from what I understand, for autism is a sign of a child who may have autism, because children with autism or even adults, they're hypersensitive. All five senses are heightened to a point where, I guess you could even describe it as painful, but Chase is more comfortable looking at something peripherally than he is watching it direct on. From what I understand, the oversensitivity could include everything from what he's looking at as being fragmented or the lighting being different with it. So for him, he's taking in everything at once, right? So he's got all these different sounds going on. He's got all the light as being brighter than what you and I would perceive. So for Chase, the lack of eye contact or having difficulty making direct eye contact was one of the first signs for the family when they brought him in order to get him diagnosed.
I want to go into this whole issue of empathy and not being afraid of strangers. Because for me, from the things that I've learned, and I'm always still learning, but from the things that I've learned about autism, to me that was one of the surprises in the book, because from a social standpoint, the lack of social contact is one of the things that I always thought was prevalent in autism.
Sure.
And then there's a quote, if you've seen one person with autism, you've seen one person with autism.
And
that one episode of not being afraid of strangers, the empathy, the not being non-judgmental, seemed to smash one of the stereotypes right away. And I wonder if you can flesh that out a little.
No, absolutely. When I first met Chase, besides wanting to write this book, because once you get to know Chase, you realize everybody should know Chase, right? By knowing Chase, it makes you a better person. So it made sense that we wrote a book so that as many people in the world as possible could meet him. But Chase, for me, and to your point, Dennis, right, he basically shattered all stereotypes of autism for me. Before I met Chase, I thought I understood what autism was and what people had autism. And I really thought that folks with autism were cold, they had difficulty with touch or connecting. And Chase is the opposite of that. He's one of the most loving, empathetic people that I've ever met in my life, to the point where it could be dangerous to him, because the love that he shows to family and friends, he also has no problem showing to strangers. So he doesn't perceive that somebody may not be kind or somebody may be cruel in the world, and there are cruel people in the world, but to Chase, he doesn't see it that way. He sees that somebody may need a hug or somebody may need love. So the empathy that he displays still never ceases to amaze me, because I never imagined a child with autism being that loving, and he truly is.
Well, when Linda, who was one of the friends that came for the sleepover, is looking in the mirror, he goes up behind her and says, beautiful.
Right.
She's saying, I don't look beautiful. He just kind of comes right up behind her.
Right.
You don't even know he's there.
Right.
And all of a sudden, he says, beautiful.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, the idea of the book was to have each one of these children in the sleep of each girl that came over to not only learn a lesson, but to receive a gift from Chase, right? And one of the big themes in this book was when people first meet Chase or they first see Chase, they perceive him as being different. And what we wanted to disprove in the book was there may be some differences with Chase, but for the most part, he's more similar than he is different, right? And he has certain characteristics and traits that we could all learn from, right? And again, being non-judgmental, being empathetic, being loving to a point where, again, he may also put himself in danger, but these are characteristics that we could all learn from.
And I wonder if you can describe the significance of the mashed potato incident.
Yes. Well, that's a good one. He's at the table. And again, we wanted to do a kind of a day in the life, right? So it's a 24-hour period throughout the book. And this book was really written for children around a fourth grade level, right? But I wanted to also be available for kids who are younger than that, people that are older. And one of the joys we've gotten, Dennis, and I'm going off script a little bit here, but was that adults have learned just as much as children have by reading this book, which is awesome to me.
That was my impression, by the way.
Yeah, right. Thank you. So the mashed potato thing was, you know, it's easy to talk about sights and sounds. He gets overwhelmed. You know, we could be in a restaurant. I'm listening to you. You're listening to me. And Chase is listening to 14 different conversations at once. So it's easy for him to become overwhelmed. And his behavior shows patterns that he may not be with us present in the moment. But he is. He's actually present in the moment. He's just actually taking everything in where you and I are filtering that stuff out. So to do that with sounds and sight, as a writer, is somewhat easy. When you talk about tastes and textures, a little more difficult. So by putting the mashed potatoes in his mouth, him spitting it out, I make the analogy that, you know, I can't stand the texture of Jell-O, right? That makes me want to spit it out as well, right? So that doesn't make him different that he doesn't like these textures or these tastes. It just, he's more similar to me than he is different. I wanted to prove that. And to your point earlier, I mean, you know, the Jell-O thing is somewhat autobiographical to me because it's a way that I can compare my own body to his and how he reacts to something.
Can we go into some of the ways that the family has to communicate to Chase? Craig points out how that it has to be very, very, very specific. Body language, and if you say something to Chase 1,000 times, you have to say something to Chase 1,000 times.
Right.
So I wonder if you can kind of go into some of the communication issues, the ways to communicate.
No, absolutely. Chase is very, very concrete, right? So one of the things that his parents will do is they'll bring him into the moment. So if he's daydreaming, I call it daydreaming because it's what I do. I'm a writer, right? So there's a lot of times that I'm here in the moment with everybody. And there are times that I've drifted off, and so I can relate to Chase in that sense. But his parents will make sure that he's in the moment. They'll make him look at them and say, all right, Chase, listen, you need to look both ways before you cross the street, right? So Chase will look both ways to cross the street. If they tell Chase that 2,000 times, then they need to tell him 2,000 more, right? And the rules may be different if he goes to his grandmother's house versus his house. So Chase is very, very concrete. It's not like you can teach him something and know that he's going to understand that in all situations. He's somebody that needs to be directed or instructed along the way so that there aren't any safety concerns, right? But he doesn't pick up cues. You know, you and I may pick up social cues, you know, body language. He doesn't really pick up on that. One thing I will say about him, though, is he has a very high emotional IQ, right, from what I can tell. I mean, he can actually, and you brought this up earlier, Dennis, if somebody feels sad, he'll feel sadness. You know, if somebody's happy, he'll celebrate with you. So he's definitely in tune with people emotionally, right? But as far as instructions or everyday life, you have to be absolutely concrete with him.
He seems to know when to say, like the mirror scene with Linda in the bathroom,
right,
and Bella in the roller coaster.
Right.
It just seems like he seems to have that knack of knowing just when to say the right empathetic things.
Right, right. And I'll tell you, again, we've been hanging out for a couple of years, right? Maybe even more than that now. But there are times where I'll be sitting on his couch and he'll come over. And not every day is a great day, right, for all of us, right? And there are times that I've been down and he'll come over. And it's not like I've said to him, oh, Chase, I don't feel good or I'm not happy today. But he'll come over and kind of give you a hug and snuggle up with you and tell you that it's okay. He senses when something's off or something doesn't feel right. So I find him to be incredibly intuitive. And again, his emotional IQ to me is through the roof.
Now, this issue of change also came up. Change and versus routine.
Right.
How does the family deal with that?
Well, I got to tell you, I tip my hat to these people. It's hard enough to parent, right? When you have kids, it's difficult to say no. It's difficult to teach them what you have to teach them and keep them safe and grow some wings on them so you can kick them out the door when the time's right. With Chase, and it's my understanding that children with autism have a very difficult time with change. They want structure. They want to feel like they're safe within that structure. And with Chase, their family is so active, especially with his sisters going to dance and theater, that Chase doesn't get a pass on anything. He goes along with the family, right? So the expectations that they set up for their children is the same across the board, right? So if the girls get in trouble for something and Chase does the same thing, he's going to get in trouble, right? But I think what's happened with the whole change thing is they've worked with Chase ever since he was young, and now he just kind of goes with the flow, right? He'll ride the river with you. If we're sitting in a dance recital for 4 hours and I'm getting bored, and sometimes he'll speak out and say something that everybody else is thinking, like, hey, it's time to go. But, all right, we're going to go to this restaurant, and then we're going to go do this after, and nothing's planned, and it's all kind of on the fly. And he's good with it. He's really, really good with it. And from what I understand, that differs greatly from a lot of children who have autism. So I just attribute the credit to his parents for making sure that the world doesn't rotate around him, that he has to survive within the world that we all survive in. And I think it's fantastic they do that.
And there's a couple of times in the book where there's this tension between the friends feeling that they should include him, and Jenna and Kylie keep saying, no, no, he likes to play by himself. He likes to do his drawings and stuff by himself.
Right.
Is that something that you can kind of go into?
Yeah, another great point, Dennis. I think that he is more comfortable being by himself a lot of times because it's difficult for him to be in a social setting with a bunch of kids. I think he gets overwhelmed with that type of stuff. He also has a difficult time with structured type activities. So if you went outside to play baseball or to do certain things, he may be interested for a short period of time and then he wants to leave. Some of his strong suit is if he's drawing or he's watching a movie or something, his focus is pinpoint, right? I mean, it's just laser, right? So I think he's most comfortable when he's doing something by himself. The one thing I will point out is I think he enjoys everybody around him, but he doesn't necessarily have to participate, right?
Right.
And I think they respect that.
Yeah, and you can see him going in and out a couple of times. And one of the things that I liked about the book, and this goes back to his illustrations and things, is the family tree that he draws and presents right. to his mom.
Yeah, to me, that's amazing. When I say it's fiction, it's truly based upon fact, right? So it's his story, but a lot of the stuff is consolidated so that we can get into a timeline that works for a children's book, you know. But yeah, that family tree, I mean, I know he's again, very creative. He'll go out, he'll grab a shoebox, he'll get yarn, he'll get sticks from the yard, and he's cutting out these papers, and he'll put everybody from the family, their names on it, and he'll cut out hearts and put their names on it, and then you know, he presents it to his mom as a gift that this is our family tree, right? So
yeah,
it's amazing. I mean, it's fantastic.
Now that you have disclosed that, I think it's your daughter.
Isabella,
Isabella is a friend. Now I have to ask you.
Sure.
And this was the one question after having read the book. It was the one question I had in the back of my mind. Now I even have more of a reason to ask it. And that is, we know that the book was written around a 24-hour time period. But after hearing all the explanations and the different aspects of autism that the friends learned, what's the reaction? What is it like? What is the interaction like between Chase and the friends after they've had this series of experiences?
Yeah, it's... Well, another great question. I got to tell you, it's impossible to meet Chase and spend time with him and not become a lifelong friend, right? So my daughter, Isabella, has become very, very close to Chase, right? And Chase has helped her to overcome fears, whether it's the roller coaster or certain things, and that's been his gift to her. I know that Kylie and Jenna, the other friends, the people that have slept over their house, it would be impossible not to fall in love with this kid, right? And that's why it was impossible for me not to write this book and to share him and his life and his challenges and really his victories with the entire world, right? He leaves such a long-lasting imprint. And if you don't see him for 6 months or a year, he'll come up to you. You know, I've seen him go up to people and still greet them as if he saw them the day before, right? So my daughter, Isabella, absolutely adores him, and we all do.
Now, there's a lot of things you can take away from this book.
Mm-hmm.
What would be the one thing you'd like people to take away from this?
Well, it's really about awareness and acceptance, right? So when you meet somebody with autism and you think that they're different, the reason you think that they're different or if they frighten you or if there's something about it that makes you feel uncomfortable, it's because you don't understand, right? So the only way to get rid of fear is to break the ignorance, is to become educated on something. So for us, the goal of this book really is around awareness and acceptance, right? So it's not like, well, we need to put people with autism over in this corner. We need to put people with other disabilities in this corner. No. We are all together. None of us is alone. And that is really the message from this book, that Chase has so much more to offer, but you need to actually get to know him. You need to spend some time and to understand autism. And that's really what we want to do. And part of it, too, is his two sisters. A lot of this book was written also for them because the siblings help to hold those pieces together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're just as much his mom as his mom. It's like he's got three moms over there. So part of it is to bring some recognition and respect to them as well.
Yeah, you can see the sisters helping out Kathy in many ways in that
right.
book. Can you see yourself pushing this book in schools and elementary and secondary?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, so the book came out.
It's very good classroom discussions. And there's a good, that's the thing, in the back of the book,
right.
Can you talk about what your thinking was in putting like discussion questions
sure.
and stuff, how that concept fits into the book?
Well, this book, this entire project was a labor of love. Again, it took about a year and a half. We brought certain people in to help. So I obviously wrote it. When I say I wrote it, I basically put the words together. This is the story of that family. So this is their story. Stephanie Grassi helped with the illustrations and that she superimposed the pictures that Chase had drawn. My wife, her name is Dr. Paula Manchester. She's actually the elementary school principal out in Dighton. So she's the one that wrote the questions for discussion. I thought she did a fantastic job with it. And really what it is if you read this book and you don't get into the questions for discussion, you haven't really missed anything. But if you are a teacher, this is a tool that you can use within your classrooms. So the good news, Dennis, is the book was released in April. So it was right at the tail end of the school year last year.
That's why we have the references to Autism Awareness right. Month and wearing blue when they exactly. The amusement park.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the idea of this book is it has nothing to do with financial gain. Nothing, right? So the first print count is around 500 books, right? So I think we sold maybe 300 or we're close to it. And we donated the other 200. So when you look at cities and towns surrounding Swansea, Somerset, Florida, this book is in a lot of elementary schools. And the hope is that it becomes mandated reading, that elementary school teachers from kindergarten all the way up to fifth grade will actually read this to their students and then get into the discussion questions. Because again, there are certain themes that they're teaching in school today. Anti-bullying would be one of them, right? Mm-hmm. We'd ask that autism be another so that children could learn at a small enough age, right, a young enough age, where this becomes a cultural thing, right? It's not about, oh my God, I'm in high school and this person has autism. By the time you get to high school, you should already feel very, very comfortable whether somebody's in a wheelchair or they have autism. If they have a disability, they are no different from us. And this is what we're trying to teach within this book.
Well, Stephen Manchester, I want to thank you very, very much for taking the time to do this podcast.
It was my pleasure.
And I really, really hope that people go out and get this book and put it in the schools. Right. Really use it's a good discussion point as well. And thank you so much for joining Community Autism Resources for this podcast.
Well, it was my pleasure, Dennis. And the last thing I want to say is the one place to go get this book is at perfectchase.com. So perfectchase.com. If you want to order the book, please go out there and we'll mail it out to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And I just want to remind everybody that music heard on A Presence on Your Journey is by George Winston. Barbara Domain is the Executive Director of Community Autism Resources. And our technical producer was Nicholas Domain. You can hear this podcast and all other podcasts by going to our website at www.community-autism-resources.com. And you can also subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. If you have iTunes, you can go to the bookstore and do a search for Autism, A Presence on Your Journey, and subscribe to the podcast if you wish. And my name is Dennis Polselli, and thank you for listening.